What's up, Justin?
Nothing much, man. We're out of the wormhole. I think we've just come through.
It's only been a few weeks since our last episode, right?
I thought we were right on schedule, but it's been like 6 months, apparently.
Oh, my God. So wormholes, man.
We just want to apologize to all the fans out there, but we're here for a Ad Astra review podcast.
It has come to our attention that a mysterious force is loose somewhere in outer space.
The mysteries of creation are there.
In the sky?
Up in the sky.
The moon and the planets are there, and new hopes for knowledge and peace are there. And therefore, as we set sail, we ask God's blessing on the most hazardous and dangerous and greatest adventure on which man has ever embarked.
It was one of those movies that I think we both thought that it was going to be awesome, and it ended up being a total snooze fest.
I'll be honest, so I'm pretty big into all things space, and in August is when I kind of put the mental countdown in. Like, okay, like a few more weeks till I get to see Brad Pitt in space. Great plot, great movie it looks like. And I could not have been more let down, I'll be honest with you.
I know, it was very disappointing. Mm-hmm. The whole movie was just very slow. It was from start to finish. It was you were waiting for it to peak, and it never peaked. But I mean, the one thing that I will say was amazing about it were the visuals.
Cinematography was shot beautifully. I do think, in terms of, you know, put aside the boring plot and character development, it was probably the most gorgeous movie I've seen shot in space. You know, all the different visuals and
the special effects were incredible.
They were creative in terms of the scenes. Not too big of a spoiler, but within the movie are space pirates and space monkeys that Brad Pitt has to encounter.
And well, was somehow boring.
It still was boring. The movie had Brad Pitt, it had space monkeys, it had space pirates, it had Brad Pitt crying in space over Tommy Lee Jones, and it was still boring.
It had all the elements of an exciting movie.
Instead of listening to music at the gym, I listen to like informational podcasts about space sometimes. That's how boring I am. Like, I am entertained at that threshold about space. And with Brad Pitt, you think it's a shoe-in that I come in here with at least some sort of a positive review.
Yeah.
Overall, the last thing I will say about it, right, we don't have to beat a dead horse here, but you know, the writing and the storyline, right? If you're going in there looking for like some great story with a plot twist and character development, you're going to feel sad about or any emotion, I would guess, other than those were cool shots. This isn't the movie for you.
I totally agree. The one thing that I was thinking about once I realized that I didn't really like the movie, I was thinking about, I really want to sit down with like a scientist, or at least hear somebody who knows about the, because with any science fiction movie, you want to hear about what's real and what's not and everything. And there's one scene where he plows through the rings of Neptune using a piece of like refuse off of the spaceship. And I was like, I wonder if that would actually work.
So I actually did read into that. And do you want to know why it's not feasible?
Why?
So he jumps off the spaceship, right, using the, what was that, like a propeller or something?
It was like the radar spinning thing.
Yeah, it was like a beacon. But imagine like a helicopter propeller, not quite as fast, but spinning. Brad Pitt rips off a chunk of metal, heroic-like, jumps towards his spaceship, which is, let's call it, a couple football fields away.
Uses it as a shield.
He's plowing through the rings of Neptune, which a ring on a planet is simply dust and debris. And as he's plowing through the ring, you know, holding up the shield like Captain America, rocks bouncing off of him as he gets to his spaceship. I did read a scientific evaluation of it, like some astrophysicist wrote about it, and he said that although Brad Pitt could have gotten the momentum to go towards the planet, each rock that hits him will be slowing him down, coming in the opposite direction. And in the movie, if you remember, what is he doing? He's speeding up or something the entire time.
Right.
And it also, none of the rocks hitting him from all those different trajectories changes Brad Pitt's trajectory towards the spaceship. You know, it's one of those things where you're watching, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, I've never seen this done in a space movie, but because it's all you can kind of say. It's so boring. You're like, well, at least I can see someone on Neptune. That's never been done in a movie theater before.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, you read it scientifically, and it's like, well, fuck. Now, if I ever did have the terrible mispleasure of rewatching it, I'd have to, like,
but
think,
the
like,
physics is all
fucked
up.
Yeah, the physics is, yeah. So, funny you mentioned
basically,
that.
Basically, Brad Pitt would be a part of the rings.
Yeah. He would just be kind of floating out there. Like, yeah. Now what? Gets halfway to his spaceship. I don't think I read much else in terms of, like, terrible plot holes. So I think scientifically speaking, I think they nailed the majority.
I thought if we're going to look at, like, the positive things, it was cool that any futuristic movie like that is cool, because I do think that science fiction like that does kind of drive the real science community's imagination towards development of new technology and stuff like that. So, yeah. For instance, the whole colonization of Mars, which is a very real thing, mm-hmm. and the description of that in the movie was great, how
yeah.
they kind of outlined how people were going to live on Mars in the future, and there was like an established military force mm-hmm. and base on Mars. They had the customized Mars camo. It was like the regular camo fatigues, but mm-hmm. with red like mixed in. Like, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and there was the one chick who had only been to Earth once.
Yeah.
You know, and it was such a process. You had to go to the moon first and then Earth, and it took you however many months. You know, they really outlined it well. It was almost as if they hired everyone to make this movie except for writers.
Yeah, they could have had such a cool storyline, too, if you would have just added in some sort of story about the because there was one element of the story that had to do with space pirates on the moon who were
it sounds amazing.
It was some sort of it was just like a hot zone, like a war zone between the US military and, you know, pirates roaming around on the moon and
how the fuck are they
rovers.
Like, how are they sustaining themselves up there is what I want to know. Do they have they don't have any space farms?
That's
up there.
That's a great question. Like, who is funding the space pirates?
That's yeah, that you don't have the moon mapped out. Like, well, we don't know where they're hiding. There's nothing in the way to block us from like looking from above.
Yeah.
But we don't know where the space pirates are.
But that story of the space pirates from a science fiction point of view would have been dope if you
absolutely.
Would like these guys are like fucking hunkered down in a mm-hmm. cave somewhere. Yeah. And you didn't get to see any of their faces. They were just like basically stormtroopers just out of nowhere who just like were terrible shots, mm-hmm. missed Brad Pitt, somehow survived.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it was almost like every time they came with something that was supposed to be super interesting, you know, a big part of the plot, it just kind of fell flat.
I mean, that right there would have been an incredible imaginative, imagination-provoking mm-hmm. Plot point would have been the future of warfare in outer mm-hmm. space. That would have been incredible to explore in a better way, but they did a terrible job.
Not to mention, now that you bring it up, Brad Pitt was using like a laser pistol.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that was.
They didn't even explain it.
Like, what was that? I didn't even know you could shoot a gun in space. That's not possible, I don't think.
Which that got me thinking, too, about this is another physicist question, sure. but I wonder what would happen, what it would look like if you fired a pistol with just like a traditional firearm in outer space. But it would probably perform the same, right? You could probably still use guns in space because...
Well, here's the reason why a gun wouldn't exactly work in space.
Okay.
But, so one of two things, right? So I'll explain. So Newton's third law, you know, so every action that you perform, there's an equal opposite reaction. On Earth, with an atmosphere and gravity that keeps you bounded, if you fire a gun, right, you feel like the recoil a bit, but you're not going to fly backwards.
It's dispersed throughout the weapon.
Exactly. Now in space, where there's no atmosphere and nothing holding you down, can you imagine
what... You would just fly off the moon.
Just like that, bullet's moving forward, you're now moving backwards.
Yeah.
Not with as much force, granted, but that's exactly what's happening. The recoil of the pistol or the gun, whatever you're using, would actually push you, you know, against your shoulder, let's say, if you're holding, like, let's just say it's an assault rifle that you're shooting. You have your feet and gravity here to help stop that, you know, from pushing you backwards, right? Like, it might, the energy that's uh-huh. that's being expended. So, you know, you wouldn't really feel it, I guess, but, you know... You'd be moving in the opposite direction with pretty significant force from which you shot the bullet, you know? So, now in terms of the bullet, right? So, it wouldn't travel faster in space than it would on Earth. You would kind of think maybe there's, you know, with like a heavier atmosphere, maybe it's moving faster in space.
It would be the same.
It would be the same. So, you know, the funny part, though, is that on Earth, since there's gravity, eventually the bullet gets pulled down, you know? Eventually that energy kind of stops and, it doesn't have enough kinetic energy to keep moving and it'll go down. Theoretically in space, that might never happen. So your bullet might literally just keep going until, something kind of gets in its way or,
So if you were spacewalking and you just fired a gun out into space, you could potentially hit an alien someday.
You could potentially, yeah. Many, many years from
now. Can you imagine if it were just an alien? Just chilling. Just all of a sudden, a bullet just goes right through his head.
What the fuck?
Oh my god!
Yeah, potentially, I guess, if it didn't hit any asteroids or space junk along the way.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Really, the whole laser thing is just kind of is straight up fiction. I mean, you could probably still fight in space with regular guns.
Yeah. I mean, it again, there has to be certain modifications.
Especially on the moon, because the moon is just is different gravity than Earth, but there's still gravity. I mean, this isn't a straight-up vacuum situation.
I forget the exact math on it. So, for example, for Earth, there's always – the gravity holding you down is always about 14 pounds of pressure.
Okay.
Right? So if you jump up, you kind of come right back down. Mm. On the moon, it's like 20% or 15%, I think. Don't quote me on that. That's like about what it is. But let's just call it 20% the gravity you would experience on Earth. So let's, instead of 14 pounds, let's call it 3 or 4 pounds of pressure. That's
right.
You get up there and it's like you've been wearing ankle braces your entire life. That's why you see, people jumping up. They do come down, but they jump much higher. If you've seen any of that space footage.
Yeah.
They're kind of jumping around, floating, they come back down. There is some gravity, you're correct, but there's no atmosphere, and there's just, it's none of the principles really that apply on Earth exactly apply on the moon.
That's got to be the next test that they do when they get to space. They need to fire a rifle.
Goes around the moon, shoots yourself in the back. So, remember the scene where Brad Pitt and, I don't even know, what was the old...
Dude. There was no one else of any importance.
Yeah, yeah. Brad Pitt.
His dad or Bad Dadstra or...
No, the old dude that was there for 20% of the film. Then he had like a...
Oh, yeah. He was like, I knew your dad. Now I'm going to leave randomly, even though I was introduced as a main character.
Yeah, you think he's going to be accompanying Brad Pitt till he dies or till the end of the film. Then he just like gets a heart attack.
And then he's like, actually, I'm going to die before you.
Yeah, it's just not... You don't see it coming, but not in a good way. Yeah. So remember when they're in the spacecraft and the little... rover, and they get pushed into the crater, and they're
that
flying.
Was pretty cool.
That was sweet. Yeah, it's done really well, but still boring movie. But anyways, they don't just keep floating forever, right? They drift downwards.
Yeah,
but that's the effect of the minimal gravity, right? It's there,
right?
The
right.
On Earth, what, dude? If you fell off the Grand Canyon like that,
you would be, obviously,
yeah,
no chance.
Yeah, but on the moon, obviously, it's just a fun little carnival ride for you.
Yeah,
just kind of float down there.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a scientist debunk that one.
I would love almost just to have, in any science fiction movie, I would love, and this one especially, I would love to have any physicist, scientist, just do, somebody could make a fortune just doing a commentary of all of these science fiction movies, saying what is real and what is not.
That, if Neil deGrasse Tyson's ever hurting for some money, if he wanted to, or anyone of that nature, right, like a well-respected scientists in their field wanted to commentate. Have you ever seen how movies, the directors sometimes comment like, oh, this is how we did this scene,
Yeah, it's boring.
Yeah, but like in a space movie like Gravity with
Sandra
Bullock.
That would
be
great.
Yeah.
And honestly, if he could make, I mean, he probably would do that, honestly. He may have already done that. I don't know.
He live tweeted or something. He was watching Gravity, Neil deGrasse Tyson was, and he either live tweeted or sent like a thread of tweets after he saw it. Like kind of listing everything scientifically wrong with the movie.
Yeah.
And I saw the movie and then I read that. I actually read it first and I was like, I need to see the movie. But, so I saw the movie, then I went back and read them, and it didn't ruin it for me, but it's all these things that like you don't think during while you're watching this action packed movie, like, oh, is this scientifically plausible? But then you read Neil's tweets and it's like, well, fuck, like you're right, like that, of course that couldn't happen. Like, of course Sandra Bullock couldn't like do a backflip and precisely land this 30-foot jump, something crazy like that.
Along those lines too, in the beginning of the movie, there's some sort of like a space antenna.
Oh yeah,
which that was a cool concept that I've never really seen explored in science fiction, but which that alone is interesting enough to talk about. But I was wondering how realistic it was that he would survive re-entry because Brad Pitt's character falls off of the space antenna and then re-enters the atmosphere, survives.
Yeah. To paint the picture for you if you haven't seen it. And again,
we're totally spoiling the movie, so yeah. Hopefully you've gotten this far.
I don't think we've given any spoilers, really, except that it's boring. But,
yeah.
You know, essentially imagine like a Tower of Babylon type of structure. This huge... They never explain it. They never explain anything in this movie, but it looks like this big, like, TV station antenna that's designed for the entire world to use, which is why it's so massive. But it, like, reaches from the ground into low Earth orbit, like where the ISS might be. And Brad Pitt's near the top. I don't know why he's there. He's apparently some high-ranking official of NASA or some space program. And why is he at the TV antenna? I don't know.
Right. It's like a space station, but it's connected to Earth, basically. Yeah. And there's astronauts that are working on the outside of this thing. Mm-hmm. Some sort of catastrophe.
If you've seen the trailer, he falls off the antenna.
Yeah, I mean, that's in the trailer.
Yeah.
His re-entry, and then he's, like, totally fine.
It is kind of cool, some of his... Like, at first, before the movie got really boring, I was like, okay, I'll give it a chance, you know? Well, obviously, I wanted to give it a chance, but when he's talking to them, he's like, yeah, like, okay, my heart rate's pretty low. I'm trying not to black out here. I'm like, okay, like, pretty cool, you know? There were some cool scenes, but ultimately, man, like, in summary, right, just to sort of final stamp on the review, you know, just, like, left a lot to be desired in terms of...
Definitely.
Plot and character development.
It was more as far as the science and the science, you know, science fiction, the concepts, that was all really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the writing of the storyline, the dialogue was all pretty shitty.
Final grade
overall.
Out of 10?
Out of 10?
Yeah.
I would say 3.5.
3.5?
Yeah.
That's kind of brutal. Like, I would give... I would not. I'd give it like a... 5.5.
Like, if it was on TV in the future, I would not watch it.
Neither would I. But, so, I'm looking at more than... If I had to base it just on the storyline and the character development, I'd give it, like, a 3. But, you know, just the whole movie in its entirety, right? You know, the way it was shot. It had some really cool scenes, you know, even though it wasn't not much substance. But the scenes, I'd give it a 5.5, you know, maybe a 6 if I'm feeling generous, but... Like you said, regardless of all the positives we're mentioning, I would not rewatch that movie.
Yeah. The only things that I really liked were the intriguing stuff that it brought up in my mind about what I would ask people who were involved in physics or, you know, astronauts or whatever, 'cause what was realistic and what's not in the future, and the visual effects that they did as far as outer space and the planets. Like, although that was fantastic.
Absolutely.
The storyline, everything else. If there was no budget to this movie, it wouldn't hold up.
You could have done that. They could condense that movie, because the thing is, you think about it, and there's not much in terms of this. Like, yes, I admit there's a storyline, but it's not, like, a very compelling storyline, and the character development is essentially not there. You could condense that movie to maybe 40 minutes instead of a bit over 2 hours, and you're not going to miss anything.
It was long, drawn out.
Yeah, very long and drawn out. Just very unfortunate. Other movies I would recommend space-wise, have you seen the movie Sunlight?
No.
That's a cool movie. If anyone's listening to this and is dejected, will not go see Ad Astra now because of our disparaging remarks. I recommend the movie Sunlight. It's I've seen it like a couple times now. It's actually pretty cool. It's really creative. So it's like in the future, the sun is dying out, right? And so they send this team of scientists, I guess you'd say, different scientists for each field. They send it this enormous spacecraft with a huge payload that's meant to jumpstart the sun in a way, and like kind of essentially turn the sun back on for the Earth.
Because it is a nuclear reaction, basically.
Essentially, yeah, you can call it that. And it's a really cool storyline. And the main plot twist, which I won't get into, if you actually want to see it, funny enough, they call the ship the Icarus, right? Mm, going to the
classic.
Sun. But the ship's the Icarus 2, because there was a first mission that went offline.
Oh, shit.
And that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. But it's a
great pitch for Sunlight.
Fantastic.
Terrible
movie.
Pitch for Ad Astra.
Yeah.
There's your review. 3.5 and...
5.5.
5.5? Okay.
5.5, because I'm a sucker for cool shit.
Now, let's get into our other topic that we're going to discuss today, which is the Area 51 raid and all of the buzz that's been surrounding the Area 51 in general, and with the, you know, this stupid Naruto run raid that people have been talking about.
Did you see there was actually one, so they had a few camera crews out there, obviously, like a couple news stations probably. And there was one clip I saw of this lady, like, you know, doing, oh, we're here out here at the Area 51 raid. And a couple people did the Naruto run behind her, you know?
Yeah.
I saw a couple of those clips. Those were really funny. Like,
yeah.
I'm glad that some people actually went out there, like, in good spirits, you know? Just, I saw people wearing, like, tinfoil and jumpsuits, you know? Just, like, having a good time. It seemed pretty cool.
The cynic in me kind of is a little bit put off by that kind of shit because it kind of makes it into a joke. It's, you know, like, yeah, it's funny and, like, it's in good humor and everything, but at the same time, like, there is whether it's at Area 51 or whether it's in another underground bunker, you know, 50 miles away out somewhere in the desert, I mean, they're definitely hiding shit from us. Yeah. They're definitely using black funds for something, mm-hmm. whether it's the government, whether it's aliens, whether it's whatever. I mean, it's just keeping secrets from the people. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know, that pisses me off a little bit.
I see what you're saying, how it makes light of a what could be the most compelling hidden secret that is kept from the public.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I almost like that it puts it in the spotlight in a way. The old saying, like, whatever kind of publicity it is good publicity. That's the way I kind of see it, because it has us talking about Area 51. Would we have done a podcast about it? I'm not sure, but eventually I assume we probably would have.
Well, we probably would have.
Yeah, but
would the public be talking about it? Probably not.
Know, I'm sure that the searches for Area 51 has spiked, you know. And what was actually interesting to me, so I was looking it up, and maybe it was due to the Area 51 topic here, but, you know, you know why Area 51 was started in the first place? Like, back in the 50s it was started.
No.
So it was started for, I mean, this is what they say anyways, but you can find online. It was started to fund, like, new types of aircraft that they wanted to develop, right? I forget who the president was at the time, but he wanted to develop new recon aircraft that would go way higher in the sky than anyone else.
This was the U-2 spy plane.
The U-2 bomber.
Yeah, it was for the U-2 spy plane.
U-2 spy plane. It would go 60,000 feet in the air, where the next closest military craft could go only 40,000, you know. And at the time when they were testing it and sending it up to that high of heights, I can't think of another word to say for that. that level of tallness. that height. You had commercial airliners at only 20,000 feet, other military personnel at only 40,000 feet, and they were actually seeing on their radar something at this unfathomable height above them. They're radioing it back in saying, hey, there's something up there, you know, and they don't know what it is. And at the time, it was so classified that the government could not admit that they had this new recon skycraft up there, because they couldn't admit to the public that they were testing that out. You know, they were in the middle of the Cold War at the time, so they had to sort of say it was natural phenomena or it was a weather balloon or something. And that's where the whole, you know, oh, it's a UFO and they're not admitting it type of speculation and paranoia came from. So it almost kind of makes you think, you know, like, since the 50s they've been using that excuse on the new types of aircraft they've been testing out. So, you know, of all the UFO claims that there have been, like, how do we not know that's just the newest and latest, greatest type of aircraft that they're developing that we just don't know about yet?
I mean, it makes sense, because if you extrapolate from 1954 when they started developing the U-2 spy plane to spy on the Soviets, what did a telephone look like in 1954? It was a rotary dial. And now we're recording a podcast that can be sent out to the entire world from the room that we're sitting in as civilians right now. I mean, mm-hmm. the civilian technology has exploded beyond belief. You don't think that if they had a spy plane that could fly at 60,000 feet and take photographs, what the hell are they doing now? So that is a totally plausible thing, that the whole UFO and Area 51 phenomenon is, you could attribute it completely to government technology and them developing more higher tech as time goes on, for sure. Because there's stuff that we don't know about. But, you know, there's always the question, and that's the fun. That's the fun of it. That's why it's fun to talk about, why it's fun to do this podcast. It's why it's fun to, you know, do research on all this kind of stuff. But for sure, you can't rule that possibility out.
And the more I read into it, you know, the rule of thumb that I'm, like, constantly seeing is that the technology available to us in the public is generally about 15 to 20 years behind what's actually been developed.
Yeah.
So the planes that we know about, the military planes or the iPhone technology, smart chips, anything like that, AI, is generally about 15 to 20 years behind what has been developed or is being developed.
Yeah, I totally believe
that. I've read that from several sources. I don't know if you've heard of Black Hat Society.
No.
Take a look at that. You can deep dive into some like longer forums online that are a bit more off the beaten path that take a, you know, really interesting reads. You know, it's enough where you read it once and you're like, oh, interesting thought. But you read it a few different areas, different corners of the web. You know, it really makes you think, like, why is that not such a crazy thought to believe? You know, that why would they put the latest and greatest out there once they've created it, you know?
Yeah.
How much more tweaking can they do behind closed doors with a black budget in the billions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's stuff that we don't have any clue what they're doing. And it's our money. And it's kind of fucked up. I mean,
in a way. But you know what does...
I understand it. I mean, I appreciate living in America more than anything, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think most people do. Or maybe most people don't. But I definitely do. It gets a little bit sketchy when you think about these powerful people that are using the money to do these things, and they've started doing it in the 50s or earlier with all these spy planes and shit like that. And like, who knows, man? Maybe we've got the flying saucers.
Mm-hmm. You know what interests me the most about Area 51? When you take a look at the aerial photographs they've taken, that shows the layout of the whole facility. Right, because it's in the middle of the desert, essentially, middle of nowhere. What astounds me the most is just how much surface area there is and how little buildings there are.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes me wonder, right, because we're never going to see pictures from in the buildings or anything like that. That's all probably heavily classified behind red tape. But it makes you think from that photograph, right, how much is underground? Like what?
Oh,
what kind of? There's got to be like a city underneath there, just housing all types of technology and everyone. I mean, everyone says aliens, but like, there's got to be such a tunnel system underneath there, right? Like, have you seen the aerial photographs they've taken?
Yeah, over? Yeah.
Dude, there's so much real estate there.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could somewhat explain that away by it being a like bombing range. So you need a lot of room to maneuver if you're doing long-range bombing training missions. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, even if it's not alien craft or flying saucer craft type stuff, mm-hmm. you look at the stuff that flies over the stadiums mm-hmm. on a regular basis. Those the B-2, or not the B-2, whatever the one that looks like a batwing, yeah, a stealth bomber. Yeah. That thing looks like it's from Mars. It's like a bat wing, a jagged bat wing. Mm-hmm. Like, who would have thought that would be a... If you would have flown that thing over somebody's house in 1940, they would have freaked the fuck out.
Oh, absolutely.
They would have no idea what that is. It's totally alien, totally unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm. I would be, like, astounded. I would be shocked. If we did find aliens out there, however many light years away, or they find us more likely at this point, or in the next couple thousand years anyways, like, I would be shocked if aliens look anything like us, given all the types of ways we know that life can sort of form and evolve.
Yeah.
Did you see, for example, I mean, like, one thing that does fascinate me, if you've looked at, like, the probes they've sent to the bottom of the ocean, right, and it's like the crushing pressure that's like down on all those organisms down there.
And there's life.
Yeah, and there's life, and there's heat vents down there by the tectonic plate fissures, I think it is. That these like little creatures live around. And like, if you've seen the videos that they take, one, they're all albino, right? Because they never have seen sunlight in their entire lives. They're probably all blind. But like, the way that they've adapted to like just sort of like walk around down there, even though like if one of us were out there, we'd be crushed like a soda can underneath like someone's shoe in an instant. Right, but they're out there just kind of floating around because their bodies have adapted, and they can live in that sort of environment where the pressure they're at from being under miles and miles of ocean,
right,
would destroy anything else in the world. Nothing else could live down there, you know. And they look fucking weird if you've seen any of those videos, right?
Oh yeah,
like there's some weird looking things down there.
Well, you just look at the diversity of life that we have on our planet, and mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like we're an anomaly, but I mean, from us to mm-hmm. look at the difference. I mean, look at just the difference between us and a dog mm-hmm. or a jaguar. I mean, what the, like, if we encountered an alien that looked like a jaguar, I mean, we'd be like, what the fuck is this thing?
What if you go to some, right, we didn't have whales here, and we go to some planet with water on it, and we see these enormous, we'd think probably they're super intelligent or something.
Yeah, I mean, we know that the Earth, quote-unquote, alien form of dolphins, I mean, mm-hmm. are just as intelligent as us in their own way, mm-hmm. but we can't figure out how to communicate with them at all.
You know what, I'm going to plug one more movie here, because I'm a huge nerd about these. Have you seen Europa Report?
No.
It's fucking good.
I'm going to add this to the list.
It's called the Europa Report, and Europa is a moon that orbits Jupiter.
Yes, I'm familiar with that.
So it's covered in ice, and if we're going to find any planet or moon in our solar system that likely has some sort of life, even if it's bacteria or something, mm-hmm. They think it's most likely on Europa, right? Because it's covered in ice, which means it has water. They don't know what point, but let's say it's 100 feet below the ice. There's water, and they've discovered methane in, like, the moon's, I don't want to call it atmosphere, because I don't think it has an atmosphere, but they've discovered methane on the moon.
Somewhere on its surface.
And methane is usually an indicator of life.
Really?
It is, yeah. Yeah. So methane is, like, the byproduct of someone living, you know, so they believe, you know, we can't really get there right now. It'd be tough to go there and, you know, look underneath the ice with just a probe or something.
You have to drill into it, probably, to really get an idea.
Yes, this movie, anyways, takes a look at the first manned crew to go to Europa and, like, study if there's life there.
Oh, that's great.
It's a cool fucking movie.
That is the most exciting thing, if we can find something like that in our solar system.
Yeah, just something that, a moon that has the building blocks, right? Like, it has water and it has, well, at least the building blocks, because there's got to be so many different building blocks for life that we don't know about. If we can find the building blocks for life that we know about, water and oxygen.
It's just weird. I think we can explore this on another extraterrestrial podcast that we do, part whatever we're on, two. We've only done one podcast.
We've done only one, okay. Yes.
Part two of extraterrestrials. We'll get deeper into this. But it is very interesting. I was walking through the forest with my dog. And I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, the Earth is just the perfect, there's life everywhere. You walk through a forest, look around, there's life underneath you in the soil, there's life growing in trees, you're alive, the dog next to me is alive, everywhere on Earth, pretty much anywhere you look, other than maybe certain, you know, dead zones, there's life everywhere. And then we go to any other planet in our solar system and there's nothing. That's very weird that we're this ridiculous hotspot, perfect, totally habitable zone, and just we haven't been able to pinpoint anything mm-hmm. and even close.
Yeah, and we do have a list of exoplanets. I think I talked about this before, but
yeah, the Goldilocks zone.
Yeah, you have to be in the Goldilocks zone, but there's a list I really like, and I forget the astrophysicist that created it. I wish I could credit him, but he gives like the hurdles that a species will face when it's evolving from, you know, single organism to, you know, I'm sorry, single cell life to, you know, complex life form like we are.
Yeah.
And it starts out, you know, first it's got to evolve, right, from single cell to multi-cell and actually evolve on the planet. And it's got to have a very, like, steady climate, right? The one hurdle that I did find that it is super complex and you wouldn't think about it is complex language. The ability to express ideas to one another, right, like a complex grammar system. Like, we can debate this right now. We can debate the idea of life forms on other planets and question our existence.
Complex ideas.
Exactly. You know, the ability to convey that to one each other, to one another, and to really think amongst ourselves and brainstorm and say, you know, why is this or is this not possible, or is there life elsewhere, right? You know, I don't think any other species on our planets are having those conversations. But, you know, that's one thing that he sort of said, and they can share ideas, right? They can share how they've created their tools, right? We can share amongst each other how fire was made and how, you know, we made this spear or this tool, right? So that was actually the one hurdle that I found that it was the most interesting one I'd never really considered before, right? You just kind of take it for granted, I guess, now that we were kind of born and wherever we're at now, you know, but
definitely. And I think about, too, I mean, exactly what you're saying, these hurdles and everything, how fragile it is. I'll bet this shit has happened multiple times. I mean, you know, you think about the history of the planet. Like, maybe we've had people before and only a small... There are theories that say that we've been reduced down to a few hundred people at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, who's to say what they what that society had developed into before the reduction to that level?
Do you think in our lifetime we discover aliens?
I don't know. I mean, honestly...
I'll put a $1,000 bet down on it.
On yes?
I'll put yes.
I don't know if I could do it. I'll put yes, too. I would say
you
yes.
You want to put a lower bet?
I'll put a $1 bet that... I can go to 20. I'll go to $20. I'm going to go to a $20 bet that, yes, I think we will. And I think the big tipping point for me, I probably would have said no as far as discovery because I think the government kind of had it clamped down. But now I think it's a little bit weird with this Tom DeLonge footage that's come out and some of the publicity with Area 51 and everything. I think it's kind of gaining some traction. The government's been forced to admit some things. Some people who have worked in government are coming out saying some things that can't really be explained. So whether or not it's just a higher level of government or whether or not it's the actual aliens, right, it's hard to say.
What about $1,000 that we establish contact? Not just we discover bacteria.
I don't think that's going to happen, man. I just think that, I mean, this might be really dumb, but I feel like if we can't figure out how to talk to dolphins, we're not going to figure out how to talk to aliens.
Well, not even contact, not, you know, but just like be aware of each other.
Just that gets weird.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Well, listen, I'll put down $1,000 on that.
On contact? Yeah. You know what might be the real tipping point with contact is if we have some sort of advanced artificial intelligence.
I agree. That's going to be the key right there, I think.
Because I don't think we could do it now. Like, if we just, like, got some message and, like, some alien script, like, hey, what's up, man?
So, the thing with that, you know, there's billions of stars with billions of planets orbiting them just in this galaxy. And then there's billions of galaxies as well that house billions of stars with billions of...
The likelihood is great.
The likelihood is great. However, you know, and you kind of, some people will point to the fact, the non-believers will point to the fact of, well, we haven't found anything yet. We've been looking for decades, you know, but really we've tipped, what, a small fraction?
So, yeah, I mean, there's just, mm-hmm. we might do it. I don't know.
Yeah, the overall percentage of the human think tank that's dedicated to this kind of endeavor is so incredibly small, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know actually the funding that's given towards NASA, do you know how much that is?
I think you've told me before. It's embarrassingly
super
small.
Low, man. It's less than one penny on every tax dollar. It's like 60% of one penny of every tax dollar is given to NASA.
Wow.
Like incredibly small, you know?
Wow. But all right. I think should we go ahead and wrap it up for tonight?
I think so, man. It's, you know, kind of tired after being in the wormhole for so long.
Yeah, we're kind of jet lagged. Wormhole lagged, so we're gonna go get some rest, but we're gonna be back. We're gonna be doing weekly podcasts coming up. We've got some cool stuff coming. We might have some guests on. Sorry for the delay, guys. Hopefully we've got some people out there who are gonna be loyal and who liked what we put out before. But we'll be back. We'll be doing this. We'll be on the discipline wagon, doing some good content for you guys coming up.
And to be a bit more transparent, the big reason for the delay there was that when Justin and I first started recording these episodes, we actually lived in different states. Justin was in Missouri and I was in Florida, and now we are sitting across the table from one another because we both live in the same city.
Which actually feels pretty fucking good.
So honestly. Much easier to do this, honestly.
It's way easier to have a conversation when you're not waiting on delays.
You know how awkward it was if there was a delay on the phone and I finished talking and then there's nothing for a few seconds?
Yeah.
It just really interrupts the flow of things. But
This is great, and we're going to be back. We're going to do all kinds of shit. Please follow us on social media. You want to plug the handles?
Dude the universe.
We're on wherever you get podcasts. I mean, if you're listening to this, you know, we're gonna plug this on our Instagram page. That's mainly where we'll be posting stuff.
Yeah, we should get a Twitter.
Yeah, we should.
Should we get an intern?
Yeah.
Are we at that stage?
If you guys are looking for some internships, let us know.
Unpaid internships.
But for now, until we lock down one of you out there who like asteroids and shit, we're going to be posting on Instagram. So follow us at Dude the Universe. Feel free to reach out with any topics that you guys would like to hear talked about. Or if you want to come on, let us know. We'll figure it out.
Until next time.
See you guys.